From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is a local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me for this all-Pennsylvania edition of the program tonight. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro gave his budget address to the General Assembly. It's both chambers of the Commonwealth Legislature, all together in one room, as he laid out both his proposal for the Pennsylvania budget and his vision for the legislative year. Coming up, we'll hear from local lawmakers. And we also get the perspective of labor when I check in with Sean Kitchen, political correspondent for Keystone Newsroom, author of the Keystone Labor Report. But let's start with Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA, Stephen Caruso, who was there in the room in person for the speech. I spoke to him late this afternoon. Stephen Caruso, welcome back to the local edition.
No, thank you for having me.
What are just some of your initial takeaways, your overall view of the whole thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've now done about 7 of these budget addresses. They kind of had a lull during COVID, as all big in-person events did. But this one felt a little bit more like just normal. You know, there's always a ton of special guests, elected officials from all of the Commonwealth, some business leaders. Every single lawmaker gets into one room, or at least, you know, everyone who can make it. They hear the governor speak. It could be for 40 minutes to an hour or two. This one was pushing 90 minutes from the governor. And he lays out, it's almost like a State of the Union. You know, we call it a budget address because the focus is supposed to be on what is going to be in this year's spending plan for the state. Where are they going to get the money from and how are they going to use it? But it is turned into, I think, a particular in the longer along I've been, it turns into this statement of statement of priorities. You know, the governor proposed $53.3 billion in spending. That's about a 5.5% increase on last year. There's money for education in there. There's some money for transit. But even though those issues have really divided the legislature in recent years, he kind of like underplayed them, I think partially because they've been issues that, even though where a lot of money is going, that's what led to the biggest issues. And he used the speech to talk a lot about what, you know, you could call it affordability, you could call it abundance, you can call it whatever you want. But some of those hot button issues that people feel in their pocketbook that I think are driving our politics, housing costs, energy costs, there's some cutting of red tape. He talked about wanting to get rid of licensing requirements, you know, for certain jobs, streamlining laws. And in general, I think he was trying to, you know, focus even less on how we're going to spend the money, because the state does have a structural deficit, but focus on what that money can do for people and what can be done even without spending a single dollar if lawmakers just, you know, work their tail off and come up with some new solutions.
The issue of affordability popped up, and not necessarily in as many words, but it seemed like he kind of pointed the blame back at the federal level and then dove into some things specifically about health care, noting that nearly 500,000 Pennsylvanians are seeing their health insurance premiums double this year. And he blamed Congress mm-hmm. for that and noted that, and this is relevant for us covering Northeast Pennsylvania, the communities hardest hit are in rural communities. Did you notice instances of him talking about kind of like the affordability for folks on the ground, the prices that they're facing, whether it was for health insurance or other things?
Yeah, I mean, I would say energy was one he talked about a lot, and that makes sense. You know, Pennsylvania is a huge energy-producing state. We have natural gas. We even, you know, we still have some coal. So that's to say, like, he talked a lot about, though, not so much how it's produced and carbon emissions, but that where do ratepayers feel it? You know, when we flip on our lights, then we get our electric bill at the end of the month. How high is it? He had said that he had the governor has been, you know, working with the Trump administration and other Northeast governors to try to get their hands around PJM, which is the grid that connects, you know, power plant operators with the utilities who distribute it to our homes, to try and clamp down on those prices, keep them lower. I mean, a lot of that's being driven by data centers, which is, you know, another separate issue, is a big problem. And there hasn't been as much conversation about, like, you know, no one seems to be saying, at least at this point, that the state should be straight up building power plants. So, you know, we have a private market there. So what I'm trying to get at is, like, you know, this is a supply and demand issue. And when you talk to a lot of experts who look at this, the problem is just that, like, data centers suck up a lot of energy, and there's not a lot of, and if the more energy they take, the less energy there is for, you know, everyday folks, and they have to pay more. So with that said, that's something the governor has been very willing to work with the Trump administration on. That was something that Trump, convened a bunch of governors. They signed an accord on this. He actually kind of gently chided Republicans in the legislature when they didn't applaud him for saying he met with the Trump administration about that. So that's been a big affordability thing the governor has leaned into. I think, again, there's going to be a lot of debates over, like, what happens, how do you spend money on that versus how do you just make some policy changes? Utilities are powerful. And again, I would point out there is that supply and demand dynamic. The governor did suggest some more rules with data centers, more transparency, more environmental standards, trying to convince them to, build their own power stations or bring more power technology or more just power onto the grid with them to not take energy that could be used to power people's homes. But, I would say that was a big thing. The governor talked a little bit about healthcare. He also did suggest he would make a $100 million state fund to try and respond to the federal government if, help with, sudden changes in federal policy. But let's just be very honest. When federal funding is, potentially like $45-50 billion a year to the state, obviously not all of that's threatened by the Trump administration right now, but $100 million is pennies on the dollar. So, I look at that as more of a, it would give the governor a chance to maybe pick some politically astute fights that can make him look good or make Democrats look good or, whoever wants to be on his side look good. And I'm not saying that wouldn't help people in the process, but, there's really no replacement for if the federal government just completely, cuts its obligation to the state, which is, again, something the governor did talk about a lot, but there's really no replacing it. It's the federal government,
I think, he's got to look for, on the politics side of things now, I think he's got to look for those opportunities for some easy hits, some political hits in there, because so often he's got to balance at least two sides often on a number of issues. The data centers that you were just bringing up is a clear one of those where he's proposing this grid approach, really emphasizing standards, but also talking about, again, that efficiency of making things happen quicker if they're going to happen while putting, some standards in place and saying, hey, you need to provide your own energy. You can really hear him trying to, have it both ways or thread the needle just so he's bringing both sides along.
Data centers is a great example of that. I see right-wing legislators from rural PA propose things that are opposed to data centers. You see leftist activists opposing it. I'm not putting these ideologies on them to try and demean it either. It's just that, I have seen both sides of the ideological spectrum get up in arms about these things. Governor is, trying to walk this middle line and I think bring as many people as he can. I think in general, new regulations are always something that particularly Republicans are to look askance at. The industry might look at askance at. How you walk this path is difficult. And then you have to get it through our General Assembly, which is, divided between both parties and, has oodles of special interests with lots of cash to throw around. So it's not easy, but, he's trying. And I think there will be a big push from people to be also though, how much of this effort is, what are the pros and cons of the governor's effort? There are some people who might be concerned about this, but also might not be a fan of some half-hearted reforms too. And so I'm expecting this push-pull to really dominate it. And I should add too, though, just speaking of political, gamesmanship, the governor is up for re-election this year. So are, all members of the state house currently controlled by Democrats and half of the Senate. So there's going to be a whole lot of that on every issue that the governor talked about this, both how do we get policy wins this year? And then how do we, see what we can turn into a campaign hit? Come on.
The big theme of the ending of his speech there was essentially, let's work together, a sense of togetherness.
Yeah.
He said, let's pass this together. Together is the operative word. We've shown what's possible when we all work together, even when it takes longer than it should, referencing what happened with the budget last year. He said it took too long, but we learned some valuable lessons. Is this talk about lessons learned from last year's budgeting process and just general talk of togetherness, reaching out across political divides? Is it just positioning? Is it just talk? Or is there some hope that this might actually turn out this way?
Well, look, the governor said that he invited all of the leaders to meet in his office tomorrow and talk about this budget and talk about negotiations. And both parties to that, Republicans and Democrats, confirmed they're doing it. I'm going to be in Harrisburg tomorrow. I'm going to keep an eye on that. So that's going to be the first real tell. in my time being up here, I always remember the folks who are in the know basically saying like, oh, you know, budget talks don't really start in earnest until June. So having everything actually, people meeting all four parties, the head honchos in rooms together in February is a big deal. Like that is something that I think one can celebrate. Now, if that leads to a result again is a separate question. I think that there's always going to be an element of political theater to any sort of public negotiation, which is what budget talks are, particularly the coming weeks when there's going to be budget hearings. And there's always going to be a matter of positioning, people talking tough just to like set the terms early. In terms of the budget actually being done by June 30th, the deadline, I think it's possible. I actually talked to Kerry Benninghoff. He's a former House Majority Leader, so he's negotiated a couple of these things before, and he felt more optimistic just because it is an election year, as you said. Like, people don't want to be in Harrisburg haggling over decimal points. People want to be out on the campaign trail making sure they come back to Harrisburg. There's a lot baked into that assumption that I'm sure folks could quibble with, but that's definitely the attitude in the building.
We're talking to Stephen Caruso, a Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA, and we'll definitely be talking to you again, Stephen, as we get into this budgeting process, and I'll be really interested to hear what you are seeing in Harrisburg. But I thank you so much for being here with us on this very busy day.
Thanks for having me. Happy to talk.
And of course, Stephen Caruso's work is up now at spotlightpa.org, and he can often be heard right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. We're getting reaction and analysis for Governor Shapiro's big budget address earlier today. Coming up, we'll get Labor's perspective from Sean Kitchen, political correspondent for Keystone Newsroom. But first, let's get a local state lawmaker's responses. This afternoon, I spoke with Tara Probst, Democrat representing Pennsylvania's 189th district in its state House of Representatives. She represents Monroe and Pike counties. Representative Probst, thank you for joining us on what I'm sure is a very busy day in Harrisburg.
Oh, extremely busy. Yes.
So were you in the room for the speech? Were you there?
Yes, I was there, and it was great. And, you know, the priorities that the governor put forth, I would have, just to be clear, I would have liked to have seen more. But we have a divided government in Pennsylvania, and I think that the budget that he put forth is a great budget to get bipartisanship, to get things done for the Commonwealth. Believe me, funding the working tax credits. We didn't raise any taxes at all, and we're giving tax breaks to businesses, to working families, funding our public education like it should be, trying to retain teachers and get early education teachers, funding senior programs, funding housing, making sure that if we raise the minimum wage, we could get, I think he said, 65,000 people off of our subsidies. And just by raising the wage, every state around us has a higher minimum wage than Pennsylvania. New revenue streams, such as skill games and legalizing cannabis, like every other state around us. We are really losing monies that could come in, new revenues. And when I say that every state that borders us does it, I mean every state from Ohio to West Virginia to New York and New Jersey to Maryland. And I just feel that the budget was good. It funds programs. I mean, we're sitting on $7.4 billion of excess. That money needs to go back to the taxpayers. It does no good. You know, we all need a little rainy day fund, but we don't need that much. And last year alone, with what we did in our budget, we still managed to put an extra $400 million in there. So I'm not worried because I'll invest in people, municipalities, seniors, veterans, and kids every day of the week rather than us sitting here hoarding this money.
You mentioned cannabis. There's also the skill gaming and how those are taxed. And I mentioned them both not just because those are potential revenue generators, but also because these are both items that have come up several times over the years, year after year. Is anything different this time, of either the way the governor's proposed it or the way the legislature is? Do you expect there to be any difference in how those two particular items are approached?
No, I don't. And the funny thing is that 25 senators stood up and clapped. And our point was the Republican Senate leadership just won't put it up for a vote. The votes are there. The votes are there. And in both red districts, blue districts, the votes are there. I mean, if you live in, you know, East Stroudsburg, if you live in the Poconos, you go, you know, literally 5 miles and you're in New Jersey and you're doing it. If you live in Pittsburgh, you're going to Ohio or West Virginia and doing it. If you live at the southern part of the Commonwealth, you're going to Maryland. If you live in the northern part, you're going up to upstate New York. I mean, it's everywhere. And it's really ridiculous. The votes are there, both red and blue districts, and the Senate leadership, Republican leadership just won't put it up for a vote. So that's the issue. And I think it's time that we do.
On the issue of housing, Governor Shapiro said that the budget that he's proposing creates a new $1 billion critical infrastructure fund supported by issuing of bonds. And he pointed out that due to the Commonwealth's improved bond ratings, that would save you $25 million overall. And then, quote, he said, quote, rather than tinker with this, let's go big and make a real impact. That was his pitch for housing. So what's your take on the go big for housing approach?
Well, I mean, look, housing is it's a problem throughout this Commonwealth. In my district, you know, in the 189th, which is the Poconos, which is the far eastern part, you know, of the Commonwealth, people have to leave the Commonwealth to make a living. And the prices, it's expensive to rent. It's expensive to own. The taxes are high. And this isn't just a problem in my district. It is time that we need attainable houses. Right now, I have senior citizens that have owned their homes and paid off for 30 and 40 years, and they can't afford the taxes. We need attainable housing for seniors, affordable housing to downsize so that new young families can go in to modest homes and start, you know, start their families. We need attainable housing, workforce housing. It's just not the same. I mean, I'm a 1992 college graduate with a law degree, and you could work a minimum wage job when I was in college and be able to afford an apartment. It is not happening right now in this Commonwealth. They are private equity firms are buying up mobile home parks where, you know, mostly senior citizens and people with disabilities live. They own their mobile home, but they don't own the land. Private equity is coming in, tripling these lots so that people can't afford to live. Private equity is buying our energy. They own our water companies, our electric, and they're raising rates for profits. It's got to stop. The madness has got to stop, and it's got to get reasonable. So as long as you're letting private investment firms own our homes, own our energy, and own everything else, we are going to be priced out. There is nothing that we can do about it. So we have to get serious as a legislative body, and we need to put stops to this. We need to keep it affordable, attainable housing, and make sure that we all have the right to heat and good water and a place to live. And I'm telling you, we need to raise the wage so that people can afford to do it.
And you start off by saying, you know, again, the work, especially in Northeast PA, it's hard for folks to find. Along those lines, Governor talked about, emerging AI technologies, the need of the U.S. to be a leader in that, and the opportunity for Pennsylvania to be part of that as well, specifically in housing data centers. He proposed this grid initiative. Basically, he wants to have a path towards building these centers while also addressing some of the folks' concerns. I'm just bringing all that up to ask you, A, what do you think of that? And B, is that something that could be generate employment for Northeast Pennsylvania?
Well, I want to be very clear. The data centers employ about 6 people. So it's a money grab. If you're going to come here and supply us with the energy and you want to have your data center, that's up to each local municipality to make that decision. Because some of the places they want to put these data centers, they don't fit. They don't fit. The people don't want them. There's a time and a place for them. But if they're going to come here, then they need to supply their own energy sources. It should not be on the backs of working families and seniors to have their water bill go up and their energy bills go up because the data center is coming in. It's time to stop fleecing the the Commonwealth, the hardworking people of the Commonwealth, so that other people can make gazillions of dollars. The fleecing has to stop. So I think that the governor's plan is reasonable. It's reasonable to the point where if your municipality wants it, then they should have safeguards that if you want to come here, then you supply your own energy. And I think that that's fair.
Been talking to Representative Tara Probst from the 189th District, serving in Pennsylvania, covering Monroe and Pike counties. Representative, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Now, I was hoping to speak with State Senator Lisa Baker, Republican, serving in the 20th Senate District, which covers a lot of rural northeast Pennsylvania, including parts of Wayne and Luzerne counties, as well as Pike County. And while we weren't able to interview her today, she did send us a statement. And here's that now. Baker responds to Shapiro's inflated budget proposal. Senator Lisa Baker issued the following statement in response to Governor Josh Shapiro's 2026-27 $53.3 billion budget proposal. Our common starting point must be delivering a legitimately balanced budget on time. We fail Pennsylvania if any side digs in and forces another non-productive stalemate. The governor once again marries big spending increases with proposed taxes he has failed to achieve in past years. Speculative revenues are never a good way to support continuing spending. It is hard to see where additional votes would come from because the arguments for and against have not changed. A state spending increase of more than 5% is not going to sell with taxpayers who are demanding better results from existing funding, nor is it going to set well with job creators already struggling to cope with worker shortages and other uncertainties. Lowering energy prices is a shared goal. This is going to require a combination of revamped policies, improving the grid to give customers more reliable choices, and leaving the door open for both traditional and alternative energy sources. With the demands of new development, energy production is not really an either-or choice. Competition is necessary if we want lower prices. We all understand the challenges and difficulties involved in advancing individual agendas when government is divided. I have introduced legislation to prevent a repeat of last year's impasse so that state dollars will continue to fund important needs such as education and programs from seniors and vulnerable populations that depend on critical social services while negotiations continue. End quote from State Senator Lisa Baker, who we do hope to have on air sometime in the future here. Finally, on the local edition tonight, Governor Shapiro's speech was earlier today. Right afterwards, I spoke with Sean Kitchen. He was there in Harrisburg. He's a political correspondent for Keystone Newsroom and author of Keystone Labor Report.
To me, in my opinion, this budget, it builds upon his previous budgets here in Pennsylvania. There's no frills about it. It continues increasing public education funding by $50 million. We have an education funding gap here in Pennsylvania needs to be taken care of by a tune of like $3.8 billion. And his budget proposes a third installment of payments to help close that gap between wealthier and poorer school districts. Shapiro also touched upon data centers and implementing new regulations when it comes to having data centers providing their own power standards. And then also Shapiro talked about having affordable housing as a key issue of his upcoming budget.
For education, you identify that gap, a little bit of what they want to do to close that gap. Is that going to be enough?
Right now, no, that is not enough. So with Governor Shapiro, when he first came in office 4 years ago, the Commonwealth Court and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court found Pennsylvania's funding, the way we fund public education, to be unconstitutional. And the state legislature and the General Assembly, they were tasked with coming up with a new funding formula to close that gap. When he started, it was close to $6 billion. That's down to $3.8 billion now. The legislature and Governor Shapiro, they have been chipping away at that the past 2 years, and this budget continues to chip away at that. At the rate they're going, it'll probably take another 4 or 5 years to completely close that gap. But they are working on that, and they've made substantial improvements. And even though, let's just say, like, the money he's proposing is not closing that gap completely, that money that is coming out and going to these school districts, it's helping with after-school programs, music classes. It's funding things that students have not had funded, school districts have not had funded in years. So even though that's not closed, you're seeing the benefits of that right now.
Pennsylvania, as with many other states, are going to be facing some shortfalls from the funding that they used to get from the federal government, especially when it comes, you know, to people's health care, other things that help with the social safety net. Those are being cut back, and Pennsylvania is going to need to make up that shortfall. But you point out something that I didn't realize, which is the PA Constitution forbids any kind of graduated progressive income tax on wealthier residents. So that makes it even tougher to make up that shortfall.
Yes, no, definitely. So with the taxes, Governor Shapiro, it's going to be his fourth budget in a row without offering any tax increases. And frankly, right now, the way the legislature is made up, a tax increase is not going to make it through the Republican-controlled Senate. But I think what this billionaire's tax is, it puts out there an alternative for Democrats and others to look at as a way to what we can fund. Pennsylvania, between the Medicaid cuts and the SNAP cuts last year in Trump's big, beautiful bill, there's going to be a $2 billion hole in the budget this year, and it's going to expand to $2.5 billion next year. So these programs, funding for these programs, in order to be restored, are going to come from somewhere. And these lawmakers have introduced a few interesting proposals along with closing corporate tax loopholes. Pennsylvania has a Delaware tax loophole, which allows out-of-state corporations to register in Delaware and avoid paying taxes in Pennsylvania. So Governor Shapiro wants to close that. Democrats want to close that. That's been an issue that they've been working on for years now in the General Assembly. And then the other issues they want to do is a tax on unearned income for billionaires, and then a tax on social media advertisements, which I think is a pretty creative way of finding revenue. And to get to your point about Pennsylvania, the Constitution, we forbid having, this is something that has been around since the 1800s. We have a uniformity clause within the Constitution, and that prevents any type of progressive graduated income tax here in the state. So the income tax is a flat tax rate, and lawmakers have to find ways to get creative in order to fund things and find different revenue streams.
Again, there were some people calling for a tax on billionaires. Did that get any traction in today's speech? Did it get referenced specifically or even obliquely?
No, that did not get mentioned at all in today's speech. And I'm not surprised it didn't get mentioned. Shapiro hasn't proposed any tax increases since becoming governor 4 years ago, and today was no different. He didn't propose any tax increases.
And one item that stood out to me that's related to labor and employment is minimum wage. The governor's call for minimum wage seemed to take an interesting approach. It seemed like he was trying to reach out to folks on the right, saying, essentially, if you're generally opposed to entitlements or you don't want as many folks on Medicaid, then let folks earn their own, keep themselves. He said, quote, shrink our entitlement budget by growing our workforce and putting more money back in our workers' pockets, end quote. What do you think of his call to increase minimum wage? And what do you think of this strategy, this messaging?
It is a different approach the governor has taken compared to years past when it comes to minimum wage. Democrats took over the House in 2022 and have passed minimum wage bills in both sessions. And Republicans haven't moved on that. Our minimum wage is still at $7.50 an hour. And the last time it was raised was when the federal government raised the minimum wage in 2009. I think Shapiro referenced in his budget that 61,000 Pennsylvanians would benefit from this raising the wage, who also rely on Medicaid. And I feel like it's a different approach. It's a more Republican leaning or conservative approach in our conservative argument to things, but we'll see if it gets through to Republicans. I doubt it will. I think we're going to be solving this fight on the minimum wage for a while. But it definitely adds a different argument to it.
And finally, is there anything that you know that labor advocates were looking for that you heard Governor Shapiro touch on today, or that were notably absent for what labor was looking for?
When we talk about labor, I know the building trades and construction unions were absolutely filled with Governor Josh Shapiro's speech. The teachers, especially when it comes to the affordable housing, the infrastructure, I think there was $1 billion set aside for affordable housing and upgrading Pennsylvania's infrastructure, and that's going to be going towards union-paying jobs. So the building trade members really love that. And everyone else has pretty much responded, applauded on the governor's budget address today, but also called on the legislature to raise the minimum wage and fully fund education.
All right. Sean Kitchen reporting from Harrisburg. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Sean Kitchen's political correspondent for Keystone Newsroom, author of Keystone Labor Report, and you can find his work at KeystoneNewsroom.com. And that is it for the local edition tonight. We've got more news on the way from the Daily, and after that, it's 2 hours of music of Mr. Kusar Grace on a Black History Month edition of Music Emporium. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jefferson.